3 days before her death, my mother told me, these weren't her last words, but they were pretty close, that my brother was still alive. That was all she said. She didn't elaborate. She said it only once, and she wasn't doing very well. Morphine had already applied its endgame heart squeeze. Her skin was in that cusp between jaundice and fading summer tan. Her eyes had sunken deep into her skull. "He's alive." Those were her exact words. And if they were true, I didn't know if it would be a good thing or bad. We buried my mother 4 days later. When we returned to the house to sit Shiva, my father stormed through the semi-shag in the living room. His face was red with rage. I was there, of course. My sister Melissa had flown in from Seattle with her husband Ralph, Aunt Selma and Uncle Murray Paste. Sheila, my soulmate, sat next to me and held my hand. That was pretty much the sum total. Dad kept glancing out the bay windows, the same windows that had been shot out with a BB gun twice in the past 11 years, and muttered under his breath, "Sons of bitches." He'd turn around and think of someone else who hadn't shown. For God's sake, you'd think the Bergmans would have at least made a goddamn appearance. Then he'd close his eyes and look away. The anger would consume him anew, blending with the grief into something I didn't have the strength to face. One more betrayal in a decade filled with them. I needed air. Our front door welcome mat was harsh faux grass, like something stolen from a driving range, with a plastic daisy in the upper left-hand corner. I stepped over it and strolled up Downing Place. The street was lined with numbingly ordinary aluminum-sided split levels, circa 1962. I still wore my dark gray suit. It itched in the heat. An image of my mother's light-the-world smile, the one before it all happened, flashed in front of my eyes. I shoved it away. I knew where I was headed, though I doubt if I would have admitted it to myself. I was drawn there, pulled by some unseen force. Some would call it masochistic. Others would note that maybe it had something to do with closure. I thought it was probably neither. I just wanted to look at the spot where it all ended. The sights and sounds of summer suburbia assaulted me. Kids squealed by on their bicycles. I turned right by the Holder's old house. This was the same route Ken and I had taken to get to Burnett Hill Elementary School. I approached the house at 47 Coddington Terrace without hesitation. My tie was loosened. I jammed my hands in my pockets. I toed the spot where curb met pavement. Why was I here? I saw a curtain move in the den. Mrs. Miller's face appeared at the window, gaunt and ghost-like. She glared at me. I didn't move or look away. She glared some more, and then, to my surprise, her face softened. It was as though our mutual agony had made some sort of connection. Mrs. Miller nodded at me. I nodded back and felt the tears begin to well up. You may have seen the story on 2020 or Primetime Live or some other television equivalent of Fish Wrap. For those who haven't, here's the official account. On October 17, 11 years ago, in the township of Livingston, New Jersey, my brother, Ken Klein, then 24, brutally raped and strangled our neighbor, Julie Miller, in her basement at 47 Coddington Terrace. That was where her body was found. The evidence wasn't conclusive as to if she'd actually been murdered in that poorly finished subdwelling, or if she'd been dumped post-mortem behind the water-stained zebra-striped couch. Most assume the former. My brother escaped capture and ran off to parts unknown, at least again according to the official account.